It's not a comprehensive paper. It's not even a paper, it's a PowerPoint. And it's one of sort of many Varnashram themes that I'm selecting and presenting. I guess I should introduce, oops, I need my mouse. Let me just introduce the topic is that I'm not a sociologist by profession, by guna karma. I'm an engineer, and Varnashram is not for topics to study. It's not something that really gets me going. I prefer to study Bhagavatam philosophy. Of course, this is also Bhagavatam philosophy. I'd rather write about Krishna's pastimes and philosophies related to that. And I realize that I may be becoming a bugbear to some people, which is like a thorn in the side. But I feel that it's sort of a duty. My duty, not any more my duty than any other disciple's duty, just because in my studies, this echoing of Srila Prabhupada's 50% of his mission to be finished, and particularly it became very much a reality for me as I see the Hungarian Yatra, its sort of evolution and the challenges that devotees face in living, working, and applying Krishna consciousness in different conditions, whether it be working in the world around them or living in New Vrindavan. And of course, ultimately, this concept that we're an international society for Krishna consciousness and that it has a social structure, which is Varnashram. So, I'm going to Govinda Swami Maharaj will read sometimes when I ask him to read certain topics, only when I say Maharaj. And this is my purposes over here. I'd like to just present with this presentation that Varnashram is more than just about Varnas and Ashrams, and what's your Varna, Ashram, we're sort of used to, something that we have a clear identity, at least what Ashram we're in. It's about conduct, rules, regulations that are favorable for the cultivation and practice of Krishna consciousness. And I'd just like to say that in my study, and I'm really studying it for the last 3 years, I've been sort of, along with other things, living and breathing Varnashram. Many of the rules of Varnashram are being used within ISKCON. We live with them. We practice them. We've accepted them. We may not necessarily call them that, but that's what they are. But there are other rules that need to be implemented in if we're actually going to fulfill what Srila Prabhupada did say, that he's lamenting that 50% of his mission is not finished. What's not finished? So actually here I will, and I don't have any resolutions at the end of this, I don't have a proposal. This is just my thoughts, which are imperfect, incomplete, but it's something that I thought that I would particularly share. That if we're really going to talk about Varnashram, to actually be clear about these rules that ISKCON rules, not just rules, but actually systems that ISKCON needs to introduce if we're going to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire. Because these rules help devotees' spiritual advancement. We're conditioned souls. Conditioned souls means that we depend upon material conditions for the practice of spiritual life. Bhakti is transcendental. That doesn't mean that every devotee who practices bhakti is transcendental. The bhaktas are not necessarily transcendental. favorable conditions, and the favorable condition is the mode of goodness. And those things, of course, this is what 14th chapter of the Gita is about, those things which cultivate the mode of goodness are favorable towards spiritual life and favorable for the development of bhakti, and ultimately to show what a holistic social model or a pilot model would be for the rest of the world. I think that's quite a long way away. We really need to be able to do this amongst ourselves. Prior to Krishna consciousness, when I was working outside in the world, I was working in the field of metallurgy. I always worked in pilot models. So I worked in actually pilot plants, which is that you take a concept and you work it on a very small scale. And if it works on a small scale, then you start building big crushers and mills and everything in order to make some type of metallurgical system feasible. So Srila Prabhupada said this as much, in especially that very long conversation in February 14th, 1977, that ISKCON, he didn't use the word pilot model, but we're meant to show. We do it here, and when it works here, then we show the rest of the world. All right. So there are four particular parts to this presentation. The first one is to actually just go further on this point, how Varnashram and the religious principles of Varnashram are meant to bring people to bhakti and to facilitate bhaktas in advancing in bhakti and come to pure devotional service. It's comprised of, at least in the way that I have analyzed it, primary and secondary rules. These primary rules, there are certain constitutional principles of Varnashram which don't change, and yet there are many things that do change, many things that are variable, time, place, and circumstance. And what does it mean for ISKCON to actually implement or recognize these primary rules and even the secondary ones and make particular adjustments in them in order to follow on to Srila Prabhupada's desire? Varnashram is Krishna's social structure. But Krishna says, Tasya kartaram abhimanyu. I'm the creator of this system. It's the only social system that works. What does it do? It elevates people, and every other social system degrades. They may appear to temporarily work, be it the democratic one or some type of authoritarian system. Ultimately, they're all speculation. So Varnashram is the system that Krishna points out, and here Uddhava is in the second quote saying here, this is Krishna's eternal system for how human beings are meant to live in this world so that they can elevate themselves, come in contact with pure devotees, practice devotional service, and go back to Godhead. There's no other social system that does that. Other social systems degrade. They may be well-meaning, but ultimately they fail. Why? Because it's not the way Krishna designed the world. So by using this term religious principles, dharma, and of course the religious principles which establish how people work and how people live, that's called Varnashram dharma. Religious principles, at least in the context that I'm using it, are material rules and regulations. They're generally, at least the ones that we're interested in, are those that are in the mode of goodness, but are favorable for the practice of bhakti. Of themselves, they may not be bhakti, but they're anukul, anukulyena sankalpa. They are favorable for devotional service. So the text that I've been studying was primarily Bhagavatam. I've been going through Manu Samhita recently, and here's how Manu defines the purpose of Varnashram Dharma. Alright?
Knowledge of the soul in connection with the various rules and regulations of action that enable one to realize the Supreme Lord who is otherwise unknowable.
So the goal of Varnashram here is very clear. What's not explicitly stated is that Varnashram itself doesn't enable you to realize Krishna. It's bhakti that enables you to realize Krishna. But Varnashram assists you to actually get there. And this is the introduction to the seventh canto, in the seventh canto, where Narada Muni in five chapters talks about Varnashram. And his topic is brought up by Yudhisthira Maharaj's question. Please explain to me those religious principles by which human beings can come to the perfection of life, devotional service. And Narada then begins and he speaks about Varnashram. Manu further goes on to also explain who is it for, Maharaj.
The students of this knowledge should be high-minded, elevated personalities. It is not meant for just anyone, but for someone who is interested in the practice of religious life and God realization.
Now Manu Samhita, especially the first part of Manu Samhita, is specifically designed for Brahmins. And whereas devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement may not all be Brahmins, but we're all meant to be practicing Brahmical principles, principles which are within the mode of goodness and the lifestyle by which Brahmins actually live. So you can see that Varnashram is already for those people who have an interest in self-realization. Krishna also explains that Varnashram is for devotees.
Those who are followers of this Varnashram system accept religious principles according to authorized traditions of proper conduct. When such Varnashram duties are dedicated to me in loving service, they award the supreme perfection of life.
Varnashram duties dedicated to me in loving service. The activities and all come to some of those acts that we perform, which we do as a offering to Krishna. Many such quotes. Here's another one by Lord Kapila.
Those who are intelligent and are of purified consciousness are completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Freed from the modes of material nature, they do not act for sense gratification. Rather, since they are situated in their own occupational duties, they act as one is expected to act.
Situated in their occupational duties, and they act as one is expected to act. And here, we may even be talking about those who are already transcendentally situated. And if we actually think about transcendentally situated personalities, then consider the Vaishyas of Vrindavan. Consider the Kshatriyas of Dwarka. Consider the Brahmins of Navadvipa, be they from the terrestrial plane or in Goloka Vrindavan. They all follow Varnashram. Now, that's not the exact right way of saying it. What they do is Varnashram. But what they do is a consistent type of conduct which, when reflected here in this world, we call the necessary conduct for a certain class of people. Sanatana Goswami raises this topic in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and this is just a statement here by Uddhava to Narada Muni. You may remember that Narad and Uddhav, they see that Gop Kumar is really feeling uncomfortable in Dwarka, and so they take him aside to talk to him in a private place, and ultimately they're telling him to go to Braj. And Narada tells Uddhava, okay, you speak. Uddhava says, how can I speak? I'm a Kshatriya, you're a Brahmin, you should speak first. And Narada says, we're in the spiritual world. He says, there's no question of Kshatriya or Brahmana here. Everyone's, you know, equal. And Uddhava replies, and he says, what can I say? How can someone like me stop thinking myself as a Kshatriya when even our Lord does? When even the Lord does not, yeah. So, in other words, although obviously, and of course this is the underlying theme of Daivi Varnashram, and I'm using the word Varnashram here because it's specifically for devotees. It means Daivi Varnashram. When we're talking about Daivi Varnashram, our identity is a spirit soul. And to think otherwise, that then becomes offensive. Nonetheless, while Vaishnavas have come to that understanding and conclusion that we're not this body, still as conditioned souls, the modes act, and therefore we act in ways that helps actually guide those modes to our advantage rather than allow them to degrade us. But even in the spiritual world, they have certain codes of conduct, and they follow those rules, although they're not only fully aware that they're not this body, but they're transcendentally situated. Varnashram is an eternal function, and it's comprised of primary and secondary rules. This statement is not something that I gleaned out of Bhagavatam. This was just my categorization of the rules of Varnashram, although you'll see that they are referred to in a different terminology elsewhere. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami about the primary and secondary characteristic of things. One is called Swarup Lakshan, and the other one is called Tatastha Lakshan. Swarup Lakshan is the characteristic of something that's always present, and Tatastha Lakshan is something that may be there and sometimes may not be there. For example, later on, the characteristic of spontaneous love, the Swarup Lakshan of spontaneous love, is real attachment to Krishna. And the Tatastha Lakshan is deep absorption in him. Arjuna is on the battlefield. He's not always thinking about Krishna. He's thinking about firing arrows, he's thinking about his enemies, he's thinking about what his particular goal is, but his deep attachment for Krishna is always present. These principles have a purpose, and the purpose is to bring everyone to devotional service. Now here you'll see a distinction and this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaking, this is from Chaitanya Bhagavat, of what I call secondary principles. Maharaj.
Lord Vishwambhar was indifferent to samskaras. He neither encouraged nor opposed their observance. He was partial to Daiva Varnashram principles, favorable to devotional service, non-Vaishnavas or Adaiva Varnashram principles were not appreciated by him. He accepted those actual ashrams and those varnas based on occupations favorable to devotional service as Daiva Varnashram. That is why the society of the devotees was dear to him.
So, on these principles and details of Varnashram, we see that the principles are those which are favorable. And in the terminology of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they can be called anukul. They are anukul, or Rupa Goswami says, anukulyasya sankalpa. What are those things favorable for devotional service? And the details may be either of a neutral nature, or they may actually be antagonistic or unfavorable. We'll give some examples of those. So what is neutral is called bhav abirudh, and bhav virudh means that which is unfavorable.
Just spelling, is it should be though not bhakti or thought not bhakti?
Though.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yes, these principles are not bhakti themselves, but they are favorable towards bhakti. What are those things that are favorable towards devotional service? I'm just listing some. No illicit sex. Celibacy is not bhakti, but it sure is favorable for bhakti. So is no intoxication. Cleanliness. Rising early in the morning. You don't go back to Godhead by rising early in the morning. So many animals get up early in the morning. But for the proper, to assist devotional service, it becomes a very important religious principle. Simply simplicity, just living by the necessities of life. And here. The other 21 qualities of human beings, I referred to earlier on in Narada's introduction to Varnashram. When he introduces Varnashram, he doesn't immediately start talking about it. He starts talking about 30 qualities that are required by every human being. And he lists them. 9 of these are the Navanga, or the 9 limbs of pure devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. And the other 21 are religious activities, such as cleanliness, simplicity, purity, so on. So he's making this statement because this is actually adhikar. This is the qualification. Varnashram, as you saw from Manu's statement, is for high-minded souls. And a high-minded soul is a religious person. It's something that, as time went on in Krishna consciousness, we became more aware of, that we can't just jump up to transcendental principles. We can't just ignore, for instance, honesty before we know what real honesty is. In other words, we can't just start lying, just as Krishna told Yudhisthira Maharaj on the battlefield to do so. We need to know what dharma is before sarva dharma pratitya, before we give something up. If you don't know what it is, how do you give it up? So accepting the divisions of ashram and varna. Varnashram is not bhakti, but this type of social division is there. Rules that are neutral, dry fasting on Ekadasi. Now when you, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his followers that yes, you should dry fast. Srila Prabhupada didn't tell us that. Ekadasi, well, Ekadasi is more than something neutral and it's more than something just favorable. Ekadasi is actually something that nurtures bhakti. So Ekadasi is... It's an anga of bhakti. Nirjala, yes. This is Nirjala. So how you follow Ekadasi? May follow it like this, may follow it like that. That in itself is neutral. That may be a detail. The rituals of different samskaras. Take one, Garbhadhan samskar. Srila Prabhupada talks about it a lot. There are Dharma Shastras that elaborate phenomenal, lengthy rituals that entail this Garbhadhan samskar. Srila Prabhupada told us chant 50 rounds. That's the essence. So once again, you can do it, not do it. Accepting sannyas, you can accept it if you're qualified, but you don't necessarily have to accept it. And Srila Prabhupada has stated that on many occasions. Stay in your home, as Krishna says in the Gita, anashita karma palam karyam karam karuti asa sannyasi. So which are those things that are unfavorable? If you actually do the ritual activities of Pancha Yajna, they'll be unfavorable because it'll take away time, although Krishna did it in Dwarka. But for us to be actually going through those different types of sacrifices, although actually the essence of those, we do perform by food distribution, offering of our foods to the Lord, and so on. Extensive purificatory rituals. Srila Prabhupada, at least I had heard when I was a young devotee, that if you follow all the rituals, you go in the bathroom and you never get out. That there's so many rituals in terms of cleanliness. So, but our main business is go in, get clean, and get to Mangalarti in time. But if one gets caught up in all of those, as at a certain point in deity worship, we really got caught up with many, many mudras, many purificatory things. It became such, you hardly had time to get on the altar. There were so many preliminary things to do. It wasn't, and of course, it isn't favorable. And of course, animal sacrifices. What are the principles of Varnashram Dharma that are not compulsory? Or when are they not compulsory? Because we talked about principles, and principles are permanent things. But sometimes, they're not followed. And this is a matter of terminology. When they're spontaneous, when one actually comes to the perfectional platform, the conduct, the following of these rules is something that happens not out of vaidhi, not out of obligation, not because they're prescribed, but just because that's the nature of sadhachara, because that's the nature of a Vaishnava. Sometimes my devotional service is so overwhelming that the rules actually are neglected. One may be, we spoke about Ekadasi earlier. What happens when Srinivasacharya becomes so absorbed in ecstasy that he then doesn't have time to, or doesn't notice that Ekadasi is passing? The purpose of Ekadasi is for us to actually advance in spiritual life. Of course, it's one of the angas of spiritual life. But then there's no harm if it is a byproduct of one's Krishna consciousness that that happens. Shukadeva Goswami walks around with clothes. It's a anga, well not an anga, but certainly an anga of civilized life that everyone wears clothes. But he's too absorbed in Krishna consciousness for that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, although those who are at the platform of prema are not obliged to follow, but still practically with the rare exceptions of, you see, Sukadeva Goswami or some others, we see that all of the exalted Mahajans all follow prescribed rules. And why? Well, Maharaj?
O son of Pritha, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties.
Primary duties are fixed, and the secondary ones are conditional. Varnashram itself, as I've already presented, is eternal. Here we see the personified Vedas say.
Nonetheless, at suitable times you assume the pure mode of goodness to protect your devotees and punish the wicked. Thus you, the soul of the Varnashram social order, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maintain the eternal path of the Vedas by enjoying your pleasure pastimes.
And although Varnashram is eternal and its principles are always continuous, still, in different ages and also at different times, it manifests differently. 12th canto, you'll find that in Treta Yuga, most people are Brahmins. In Dwapar Yuga, most people are Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Now that becomes the majority of society, and there's no secret what's in Kali Yuga. Most people there are all Shudras and barbarians. So what this will really mean is that in these ages, you will have a different type of economy. That's part of Varnashram and the rules of economy. You'll have different types of education, because the nature of the people is different. You have different type of governance. You have a different governance for Brahmins than you do for Shudras. And the rules that connect to all of these things, and Varna and Ashram, in detail, they'll change, and the application of Varna Ashram. Hence, we see certain statements where Prabhupada says, you can't do Varna Ashram in this age, in Kali Yuga, which my understanding is, at least in context of his other statements, is you can't do it like they did it in Dwapar Yuga and Treta Yuga. There has to be a different way. Not only that, in 7th canto again, Narada Muni gives this verse that Brahmins have analyzed that according to time, place, circumstance, the laws of Dharma are differently applied. So why? Because Varnashram is meant to elevate Jivas to the mode of goodness and then to bhakti. But these modes of material nature are always competing for dominance. So because they're competing for dominance, the way in which Varnashram is applied has to change. However, even though how you apply Varnashram, which becomes a challenge to the Krishna consciousness movement, how is it that we're going to actually apply Varnashram? Even though it's different than it was, probably different than the way it was practiced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago here in Navadvipa, because we're in a different time and a different place. So, but appear it different because of the domination and the competition of the modes of material nature. Still, the primary principles have to remain the same because the modes are still the same. It's still the same three modes, there's no mode. Their qualities are still the same, their effects are still the same. Therefore, certain principles remain non-changing. So when we establish Varnashram in ISKCON, then we need to think about what are those rules that are impractical, that can't be implemented. What are those rules that require adjustment? And adjustments need to be made, and Srila Prabhupada made many. What are those primary rules that we have to keep? I may hear from now, Maharaj will read Prema Vivarta. This is Rukh, which is written by, well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur at least wrote it down. This is Sir Damodar Goswami speaking to Raghunath Das Goswami.
Then Raghunath Das once again humbly approached Swarup Damodar with folded hands. I have another question. Please enlighten me. The highest and purest form of devotional service is above the prescribed religious practices of Varnashram. Therefore, why is the householder bound by prescribed duties according to his ashram if he can easily transcend the duties of his social order and render spontaneous devotion? Swarup Damodar Goswami replied, "Listen, dear brother, I will disclose to you the essence of everything by enunciating the principle of pure devotional service. It is simple to live one's life following one's prescribed duties, but if one tries to execute someone else's prescribed duties, then his life becomes burdensome and artificial. The sincere devotee intelligently executes from amongst his prescribed duties of Varnashram only that which is conducive to pure devotion. By diligently rejecting those duties which are detrimental, he attains the platform of pure devotion. Therefore, one should not be overly attached to stringently following the prescribed Varnashram Dharma duties. But one should unflinchingly render unalloyed service, and by doing so, emulate the hallowed path of the saints. Rejecting the overly rigid rules of Varnashram Dharma assists in elevating one to the platform of a pure Vaishnava."
So this little description here, it really lays out the challenge for the Krishna consciousness movement. How do we actually do this? What is it that we accept? What is it that we reject? And it means, and this will be the last part of this presentation, is to actually recognize those primary rules, see which those are secondary, and then what do we do with them? We have training to become disciples, we have training to become gurus, to become sannyasis, we have training to become GBCs, we have a college and so on. But where's our training to actually be an international society? Where's our training, at least according to Narada Muni's statement, how to actually rise and stay in the mode of goodness? What are the guidelines? What are those things that are essentially important? This is really something that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to teach, and he wanted us to teach it in a Varnashram college, which he wanted every one of his temples to have or to become, and Srila Prabhupada wrote about it quite a bit. Krishna outlined certain constitutional, I use that term, parts of Varnashram, and you know this, and I won't ask Maharaj to read these, just for saving some time. Bhagavad Gita 4.13, so there are the modes of nature, guna, karma, vibhagasha. This is essential basis of Varnashram. And why guna, karma, vibhagasha? Because everyone is under the modes of material nature. Within this material world, and these are all quotes from the Bhagavad Gita, we are governed by the words of material nature, but we have to work. everything that we do is work, even our bhakti, and means that we're actually working, but we're working with devotion. If people work in the right way, they can become perfect. How? If they worship the Supreme Lord. In other words, by performing their prescribed duties as an offering to Krishna, as we saw earlier, everyone can achieve perfection. Krishna is connecting perfection along with Varnashram. And of course, finally, Krishna says, and don't do someone else's duties. And let me just touch on one topic without it necessarily causing offense, I hope not, to anyone. And we discussed the roles of women and men in the society. Of course, Varnashram means that, what to speak of, that men and women have different roles. Different men have different roles, and different women have different roles. But the idea of women being in a position of leadership in the society, we're doing it, Prabhupada did it to a certain extent, but what is the long-term vision of the movement? What does Varnashram mean in terms of hundreds of years or thousands of years? Is it something that we perpetuate, or is it something that's utility as being a principle, but not a principle that fulfills what here Krishna says? Even though many leaders, many women leaders are very good. They're excellent. In fact, if you see some of the leaders we get nowadays on the world stage, Hare Krishna. So men leaders, they're an embarrassment. But still, here, ultimately, Krishna is saying that even though someone is very good at doing something that's not their prescribed dharma, dharma prescribed by Krishna, it's better to actually be engaged in one's own particular service. This was just an aside. But what are the primary principles? If these are constitutional elements of Varnashram, some primary principles that we derive from that, I think that we'll agree on this, and I'm keeping aware of time here, Dr. Chumar, so that we got 45 minutes, right? I'm not far from being finished. That society is divided into Varna and Ashram. I don't think that that's really an argument. The fact that we've been divided into Ashram has been since day one of the Krishna consciousness movement. The Varna, for some reason, there's a sticking point as to actually accepting that that really applies to devotees, although we accept that part of Varnashram, the Ashram part, does. Everyone in Varnashram must practice bhakti. Of course, that's not anything new for Vaishnavas. But interestingly, it's also the same principle if this was a Krishna consciousness or was able to present Varnashram to the greater society. We would request people, even if they don't have faith, to chant and hear, because how else are they going to actually really become purified? These activities may be conducive, but ultimately it's Shravanam and Kirtanam that's going to be purifying their hearts. So these are regulatory activities. Training youth. Gurukul, Brahmachari Ashram, a Varnashram college. But Srila Prabhupada emphasized, when he spoke about Varnashram, he emphasized training, training, training. So how do we train? How do we train people? And now we're doing that. We're doing it as far as disciples are concerned and so on. But in terms of a social model, in terms of how to work, in terms of how to live, there requires prescribed training. Members should be qualified with the 21 qualities of human beings. It means that devotees should be good people, because that 21 qualities actually defines what a good person is, what a person in the mode of goodness is. Ladies should be protected throughout all of their lives, something that Srila Prabhupada emphasized. And of course, and this is, Manu begins, this is one of the principles, that there should be regulate the association between men and women, which is a non-starter in the society outside ISKCON today, globally, practically speaking. secondary ones. There's so many samskars, so many rituals. Srila Prabhupada emphasized samskars, but how we're going to implement those samskars is something else. The purification takes place by spiritual practice, by samskaras, by good birth, and by good association. So they are something that Srila Prabhupada said, however they are of a secondary nature. We see, for instance, if you read Bhagavatam, talk about Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha is certainly a stage of life which has not been well defined in ISKCON. Brahmacharya, we have pretty good training. On Grihastha Ashram, we're working. Sannyas, we have a ministry. Vanaprastha is still there, but who's going to, the very name itself, who's going out into the forest? No one. Srila Prabhupada didn't expect that. Don't cut your hair, don't cut your nails, don't bathe, just live on fruits and nuts. These are the details. But the essence of Vanaprastha is you have to retire from work, you have to retire from family life in terms of being actively engaged. So Srila Prabhupada would say, travel to holy places, engage in chanting and hearing, and re-engage again in full-time service, which family life may have actually stopped you from able to do, perhaps in the way that devotees did when they were brahmacharis. So it needs to be changed. There we have to work on some of these, and some others, for instance. I mentioned that pancharagya, purity, you need to have practices or habits of purity. Some of them can be very extensive, but even the basic ones that Srila Prabhupada gave us have changed. When I was a new devotee, there was a little, bucket, I forget the English name, outside the temple room. You had to wash your feet before you came in the temple room. We don't do that now. Devotees don't necessarily wash their hands and feet before and after eating. But these are standard things that Srila Prabhupada gave us. So what are the actual standards of purity, of cleanliness? And a topic that we've talked here, charity is compulsory, except especially for grihasthas. If you don't give your life as a brahmachari, a sannyasi, then grihasthas, especially who are working in the world outside, they have to give charity. Now how much? 50% of Srila Prabhupada said, or sometimes we talk about 10%. And we've had controversial discussions here. Can you actually legislate this? Well, Bhagavatam legislates it. Manu Samhita legislates it. It's dharma. It's our religion. It's a fundamental religious principle. But how much? We need to establish that. So with these considerations in mind, we really need to consider how to introduce these principles to facilitate devotees' advancement. At least my personal experience is that unless we do this, the unregulated practice of Krishna consciousness, which means not the part about the sadhana and the morning program, but the unregulated application of Krishna consciousness in people's lives and their ashrams and the way that they work, becomes a real burden upon their lives. How is it that they're actually meant to become Krishna conscious in this life? It's an obstacle. We need, as I mentioned earlier, to set an example for the rest of the world. Now I'm going to ask Maharaj just to read a few quotes that you've probably read, and then we'll conclude here, and maybe we'll have time for a few comments and questions. But these are Srila Prabhupada's emphasis that we do need to do something. What it is we need to do, that the body should decide, but ultimately as an institution, we need to do something because it's what Srila Prabhupada wanted and what devotees need, our devotees need. It's not that they don't need it, they need it. Go ahead.
Ultimately, the aim of Varnashram Dharma is to turn a crude man into a pure devotee of the Lord or a Vaishnava. For this ashram dharma composed of four varnas and four ashrams. Unless society is divided into these eight categories, it is simply an animal civilization. There must be some systemized, regulated arrangement.
So, Krishna explains that yes, varnashram is for devotees.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, taking full shelter in me, with the mind carefully fixed in the devotional service of the Lord as spoken by me, one should live without personal desire and practice the social and occupational system called varnashram.
In the earlier quote, Prabhupada is giving the general picture of overall society. Here Srila Prabhupada, Krishna specifically talking about devotees. And does devotees mean devotees within ISKCON?
Hari Shori. Where will we introduce the varnashram system then, Prabhupada? In our society, amongst our members.
And how will devotees be trained for varnashram? Srila Prabhupada really got into a real swirl of communication about varnashram college and discussion.
The varnashram college means to train people in varnashram life. In human society, a section of people must act as strict brahmanas. Similarly, another section must act as strict kshatriyas, still another as strict vaishyas, and the rest will be considered as sudras and less than sudras of the chandalas. This is a materialistic division, but spiritually, anyone can be elevated to the transcendental position simply by devotional service.
If you research the things that Srila Prabhupada said about varnashram college, it's clear that Srila Prabhupada wanted that for devotees as well, and he wanted it to be an integral part of the society, not even in one geographical location, but everywhere. And Prabhupada considered that this was his unfinished part of his mission.
I have no lamentation, Prabhupada said.
By the way, I'm sorry, this is Abhiram Prabhu's recollection.
I have no lamentation, Prabhupada said, then paused and added, no, I have one lamentation. A devotee asked, that you have not finished translating Srimad Bhagavatam? No, that I have not established varnashram. On the next occasion, I was with Srila Prabhupada when he said, 50% of my work is not complete because I have not established varnashram.
So I take this that it's left to us. Prabhupada then made it very clear that it wasn't going to be easy.
So it is very difficult to bring, introduce varnashram, but at least there must be some idea.
So Prabhupada, there must be some idea. My question is what that idea is, and are we going to work out what that idea is?
Then we have to introduce this varnashram dharma. It must be done perfectly, and it is possible, and people will be happy.
Thank you very much. That's it. I'm on time, and if you want to continue some discussion, but it's something that I know you're pressed with time, we can do it some other time. All right. Vaishnavs, Vaishnavis like to contribute?
Gopal Krishna.
Gopal Krishna. Oh, you, all right. If you call, then that'll be easy. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna. How do you practically implement varnashram? You were talking about varnashram college. So what will we teach and how will we implement it?
I'm not going to give you an answer for that because I don't think I really have a pat answer. But I think that we need to start off by the agreement that varnashram is necessary, and that we need to do something because this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. For me, me in my meeting and discussion with devotees, I think this is the primary hurdle, and it's a major hurdle. Once we decide that this is something we have to do, then we're pretty good at working things out, or at least setting up systems for working things out.
Thank you, Sean.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful presentation. And I'm asking if it is possible in this body to keep on the topic for every year when we meet here so we make some progress in developing these ideas and come to a possible application as soon as possible.
Yeah, just a brief, I've written one book on the Varnas, which actually half of it is more or less on these 21 religious principles, their cultivation, their importance, and so on. And currently I'm working on Ashrama, which is, these are sort of relatively easy as I can see, because there's so much material in Shastra. But society is more than this. Society really starts with economy. I'm not an economist, that's one thing for sure. It means economy, it means governance. Although good thing is Prabhupada already told at least ISKCON how to be governed and by the GBC. So these other things also need to be there, because ultimately society works with money, and how that money works, or is it money? We wanted to work, whether we wanted to work by barter, or Srila Prabhupada had mentioned both by barter and by real currency, namely gold. There are other aspects to Varnashram other than just this, and these are just some. And of course, education is a very fundamental part of social development. So we're doing this right now in Hungary. Our main project has been to actually inculcate these 21 qualities into the training of Gurukula, Bhakta program, counselor system, classes, and the devotees become more and more aware of the need of the basic religious principles which establish certain standards in devotee conduct, and that we can't just wave the flag, devotees are transcendental, so I can do anything. But no, and that we're accountable. We have, because the society means you have rights, but you have obligations. And they're proportional, they're related to each other. You only have rights when you actually have obligations. So what are the rights and obligations of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, which also will bring up the question of who is a member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, not separated from Varnashram.
Three things. Can you supply us with this presentation?
Sure.
Second is, you mentioned a book on the 21 qualities.
Yes.
Is that available?
Yes.
Where?
Downstairs.
Okay.
Outside of Panchatattva.
And the third is, following what Dinasharana Mataji said, something Devamrita Maharaj mentioned earlier in one of our meetings, those verses from the seventh canto.
Yes.
So something that I did is I looked them up and sent them out to all the presidents in my zone and made the following suggestion. So it's maybe something that as a GBC body we can consider, not like a rule, but you know, an encouragement. So what I asked them was, for the next 21 months, take one of the qualities and have a Sunday lecture on one of those qualities, and then the next 4 weeks on one of those qualities or something along those lines. Consider it. And they got back saying, yes, we'd like to do this. So to help further the message and the unfinished part, acquaint ourselves with some piece and become more knowledgeable in that piece and how that piece fits in with Varnashram. I guess that's where, you know, Narada's taking the topic,
yeah,
right from the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
That's something that we could all do that's like really easy.
And that's easy, because that's really the, you know, for every topic, every shastra has to have an adhikara. What's the qualification? The Narada is saying, this is the qualification for you to even understand Varnashram, to follow it, or even be interested in it. But if you're not practicing these, you're not going to be interested in Varnashram either. And they're very, we do something very similar, and we have every devotee prepared to give a class so that they go deeply into the subject rather than just sort of hear it. But that's a really good system, and not difficult. And it doesn't oblige us to define anything.
It's education.
Yes.
Beginning.
Yes.
On the topic.
Yeah. And necessary. Oh, sorry.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for this presentation. This was nice and enlightening. A major challenge that I perceive, especially being in a female body, with a desire to practice Krishna consciousness in a way that Srila Prabhupada gave it to us, is many aspects are very wonderful. Now you are mentioning 21 qualities to be practiced, which is certainly the qualities of a human being, and along with that the practice of Navavida Bhakti. So my question would be that what will be the impact on the practice of Navavida Bhakti, of applying the principles of Varnashram, especially concerning the men and women's roles. I have been living in India for 30 years, and in the temples in India, some of these Varnashram principles are more already applied than in the temples around the world. And my experience is that the result is that women cannot really practice or express their devotional life within the temples. And their practice of bhakti becomes relegated to a lonely room somewhere, either in their home or wherever Krishna has provided for them. So for me, this is a big challenge. What will happen to the women of this movement?
Yeah, and it's, and you're right, and it's not just the women, but it's the whole concept of Varnashram, one of which you're mentioning degrades. It must degrade, it's material. The only thing that keeps it afloat is Krishna consciousness. And where there's not Krishna consciousness, then immediately it'll degrade to the caste system. And that's why we have the caste system now. We don't have the caste system anymore. You just have, for instance, materialism all around the world, but even in India, that's what's prominent. Why? Because the heart of Varnashram, which is bhakti or devotional service, is not there. And when the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, especially, when they stop practicing spiritual life, and when they stop advancing in spiritual life and relating to everyone as spirit soul, and start relating to everyone as body, then you start making all kinds of artificial distinctions. However, there are distinctions amongst different people, different classes of people, different sexes. It's just that the distinction and discrimination are two different things. And how distinction degrades into discrimination I won't be getting this exactly right, but he says the father is worshipable. 100 times more worshipable than the father is the guru, and 100 times more worshipable than the guru is the mother. Something like that. In other words, this in Vedic culture, women are supremely respected and worshipped. It will degrade. Now, how we actually do that to avoid that happening? Of course, that's already without Varnashram, we did pretty good in this time. So it's not that we had Varnashram to have abuse against women and children. That took place without Varnashram. But we have to establish it in a proper way with proper guidelines. But at the same time, you know, if you read Bhagavatam, when Narada's talking, he speaks about Varnas and Ashramas, and then there's a separate duty for women. Manu is the same. So in Varnashram, ladies do have different roles than men do. which is different than the modern feminist egalitarian society that we live in. And it's also something that Srila Prabhupada also echoed, although we also see that Srila Prabhupada also treated ladies in very much the same way as he treated some of his men. The question is, how does that fit in with Prabhupada wanting Varnashram, where the roles are defined differently? I'm not going to answer that here, but they are different approaches.
I wanted to ask another question, but now I will. Towards the end, you the men and women have different roles, but are there must be, what are the similar roles? Similar roles and different roles?
I think this idea of a Vedic woman as being a housewife, solely a housewife, is not a comprehensive one. Draupadi was not just sitting in the kitchen all the time. Although she was the one who got up first in the morning and was the last to go to sleep, she fed everyone from servants to their husbands, but she was sitting there on Yudhisthira Maharaj's side. She was in court. She was also helping make decisions. She was managing palaces. She was managing thousands of people. Brahmanis help Brahmins do their yajna, do the sacrifice. They're not just cooking and taking care of children. So they also have varna, and they also act according to their varna. And then in times of emergency, then we see that, well, here you have, what was that lady in Rajasthan, queen, who's, no, not Mira, it was Chakriya, who's, yes. So, and they go out and fight, and they're out, sometimes they're out there driving their husband's chariot, and that's how Kaikeyi and got Maharaj Dasharatha into the situation. Why? Because he was so blind, because during those, she was the chariot driver. So they're also engaged. It's just a question of how that engagement is taking place and whether women's foremost role is this independent career woman, independent of the home and their husband and somewhere else, which is today's world, or that it's actually centered around the family and it's connected to actually the activities that are done both in home and the activities that the husband does.
I just had a request or suggestion that I think one of the key principles or at least concepts that it would be nice if you and others could explore is the idea of protection. Because like say we talk about women and we all hear it, you know, the quote, women should be protected, and then the typical response based on history is, so where's the man who's going to selflessly protect me because somebody are exploiting me and therefore I have to be independent, etc. And I think the same thing comes up when we talk about, you know, Prabhupada's references in the Bhagavatam, you know, sutras shouldn't bank money, they should be given full protection from the higher societies. But, you know, the history in India and the history around the world is those higher classes almost always exploit, they don't protect. So I think that would be, like when you talk about how are we going to put this into practice, I think that's a critical thing to explore. How does protection become the first principle? And not that, you know, we're going to divide everybody first, but we're going to make sure there's protection for everybody. And then, you know, I think that's something that just needs to be looked at very carefully, would address a lot of the questions.
And that protection, at least one aspect in which it manifests is through training. Unless you train, and that's why, what is brahmacharya like? 20 years of training before you step into the Grihastha ashram. And most of it is moral training. Most of it is training to be a good person, to be responsible to know the laws of Dharma. And then whether you're a Kshatriya to gain that type of training for astras, or whether you're a Brahmin and doing yajnas and deity worship, that's also there. So that when you come out in 25 years, you know how to give protection. But if that's all we do is we talk about it, well, with the faintest idea what it's about. So to actually give the suitable training to our devotees so that they recognize, yes, when I take responsibility for a woman, then that responsibility is a very serious responsibility, not only just because she's a woman, but she's also a Vaishnavi, and you know how to do it. Especially because you've seen your parents do it as well, which is also a problem, that may not necessarily be there. You haven't seen that type of culture. So it's a culture, and Prabhupada has sort of given us the idea, the picture of where we should go. The question is how we're going to get there.
We could have time for a couple more questions for Shivaram Swami, Gladman Swami.
You mentioned that the essence of protection is education, but in the Vanashram system, generally only the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas went to Gurukul. So how?
Vaishyas, all three orders.
How did the Shudras get that education?
They get it being servants of the Kshatriyas, Brahmins, Vaishyas, who take care of them, govern them, and they also have their tradition. Narada says that they also have traditions. Very interesting how the qualities of the Shudras. They're honest, they never steal from their masters, they have a culture, a tradition, and they serve their master, and they have this idea. We've been with this family for the last 10 years. A father teaches his son, and we've never taken anything. We've never stolen anything. And even if our master can't afford to feed us, we remain faithful. We never left this family lineage. We're always here. Faithfulness. That's why it says, Kalo Shudra Shandavan, is that... Who's a little bit? Yeah. So they learn. They have their own traditions, but they don't go into the official Gurukula system. But Gurukula is for the top three orders.
Maharaj, I was just wondering if your community in Hungary, I mean, you've got a small community, I know, and are you beginning to see manifestations of a sort of a gradual move towards Varnashram, and could it eventually become that sort of microsystem that you were talking about, as a model for larger systems?
When I talk about community, I'm not talking about the farm, because Varnashram is not just for farms, although it's easier. We talk about it. Have I seen progress? I don't know. Some progress. The progress is that it's in the conversation of devotees. The training is being established. Devotees are aware of it. They speak of it. And gradually we're hoping to be able to have those type of safeguards where we start calling up devotees on principles of honesty and truthfulness and so on. Ultimately, I think in the languages which our late Gopi Pranadan Prabhu said, he said, ISKCON needs to produce modern-day Dharma Shastra. Time, place, and circumstance. We need our own Dharma Shastra. You can have General Manu, and in fact, our GBC resolutions, for most part, when you pass a resolution, is a Dharma Shastra. You're passing a law. This is how you have to behave in this society, or else this is the consequence. So we actually need, in terms of all the different aspects of managing a society and actually establishing a society, we need rules how that actually works. But it has to be very clearly in line with Varnashram principles. And has to be visibly so, I think. which perhaps GDC resolutions aren't visibly so, although they are. Just like this thing, no illicit sex life, no gambling, no meeting. These are not bhakti principles. These are principles of varnashram. But they're not presented to us in that way, but they're things that everyone accepts, everyone follows, because otherwise you can't practice bhakti, or at least your progress is going to be super slow.
Any
final question?
Okay.
Thank you all very much for your patience, and I hope everything